Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Get ready for Legends of Sport with Andrew D. Bernstein. The Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame photographer has hit the podcasting scene. Each Tuesday, starting February 27th, Andy and co-host Jonas Wadler will chat with some of the world's most prestigious athletes of all time. Enjoy stories from life behind the scenes with the most decorated sports photographer in the business. Make sure to subscribe to Legends of Sport with Andrew D. Bernstein, beginning Tuesday, February 27th, exclusively on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the brand new Podcast One app.
Playing the music you may have forgotten and some of it you're too embarrassed to remember. Welcome to the Toolbox. Broadcasting from a stick so big, all we gotta do is show it to you and you'll smarten right up. Back in 1987, America was rocking out to a song about beating the crap out of a child. It won Record of the Year in 88 at Suzanne Vega on the Toolbox.
My name is Luca. I live on the second floor. I live upstairs from you. Yes, I think you've seen me before. If you hear something late at night, some kind of trouble, some kind of fight, just don't ask me what it was. Just don't ask me what it was.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show with Gina Gratt on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and the debut of the new game, Bald Brian Shits on Your Point. And now, a man who's gone from cleaning carpets to walking red carpets, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you. We do appreciate you sharing the good news. Now, as you hear this, the Oscars will have happened last night, but we've recorded this before the Oscars took place. So we'll be back with the whole wrap-up, the party, the celebrities, the mishaps, the hijinks, all keep you all filled in with that. Good day, Gina Gratt.
Good day to you.
And Bald Brian.
Fred Durst did a wonderful job with my script.
I played the Knicks and Tora drop because last night Gina and I went to an event and met a fan there, listener of the show, and he said, I was the one who drove Knicks and Tora home that night when he drank too much mangria.
He promised me dinner.
Beachbody on Demand. You can text Adam to 303030 for a free trial membership. And, of course, HIMS, H-I-M-S. You try it out for a month just to $5. Go to HIMS. Go to forhims.com/M.
Hey, you might want to check your pens real quick because I just picked one up and I'm trying to get this off of me.
I've been getting a lot of ink from a lot of these pens. One thing,
Adam Carolla gets ink.
The one I must say, I have it all. I have certain things in life that I'm realizing would bring simple pleasures and that I would like to sort of transition toward.
Okay.
And I'm trying to, I feel like we all do this. You spend 20 years just sort of eating at the same place and kind of doing the same thing and cheering for the same team and all that kind of stuff. And then at some point you start thinking, what else is there? What's outside of my world?
Sure.
What might bring me pleasure? You go, well, owning my own jet aircraft, but that's not realistic. I was at an event last week with Dennis Prager. Dennis Prager always talks about the pleasure of a fountain pen and just how much better they write and how much better they feel and how much joy it brings them. And there we were after the show, and I had my Sharpie, my $1.29 Sharpie, and he had an $800 fountain pen. And it was beautiful.
Yeah,
it was beautiful. But it brought him pleasure. Like he took it out of the little velvet flute case, you know, and got it out, checked his ink level at some point. And I understand it completely. And you can say, well, the pen I'm holding is, you know, Uniball, whatever, works completely fine. It's $3. What's the deal?
That's not the point.
It's not the point. Like, it really brought him a lot of pleasure, and I want to get into that.
And it turned a mundane activity, signing his name or whatever, right, into an activity, yes, he kind of enjoyed.
And it does look beautiful, yeah, as well. All right. Lots to talk about.
She has a little mink mustache.
Do I? Is it on my face?
You look like a dastardly villain.
Hold on.
So I've told you guys the story many times of having my motorcycle towed and having multiple motorcycles towed. And I had one towed in front of my... Well, one time I got arrested and I was pulled off the motorcycle. Right. One time...
You had to walk home from, like, Mulholland.
I had to walk home down Laurel Canyon. That was being pulled off the motorcycle and having the motorcycle towed. The one time I got arrested, they just let me park the motorcycle, I think. Another time, a motorcycle was towed in Century City. I was not there for it, but I had to go get it. And then I had another motorcycle towed from in front of my apartment when I lent it to my roommate, who took it to UCLA, and they stole the license plate. And I always talk about the mysterious and kindly stranger who picked me up in his Pinto.
That's right.
When I was hitchhiking down Laurel Canyon. Now, they towed my bike. I was so livid at the cop. And the cop said, I'll give you a ride, like, down Laurel Canyon. And I refused. I, like, spit on the ground.
Fair.
I was like, I want nothing. I did what they did in those World War II movies when they would march the captured Nazi soldiers through Poland and the old ladies were like, yeah, like that. That's what I did. I'm like, but after,
same scale, same, yeah, you know.
After I got done,
same stakes.
After I got done spitting on him, he drove off, and now I'm just sitting there with my motorcycle helmet, standing in the middle of Laurel Canyon, and I had to walk like 4 miles home. So I started hitchhiking. And a kindly stranger picked me up in a Pinto. Will?
Yeah.
Will Gote.
Oh, yeah.
Is his name. He, at the time, and I don't know if I would remember Will as vividly as I do if he didn't tell me that he was in a movie called Stand and Deliver that was a big movie about to come out, right?
Yeah. At that point, I hadn't told anybody.
Wow.
So
he confided in you.
So what is your record?
Hey, but you were right, because you look pretty flustered. I saw as the cop had driven off and left you behind. I figured either you were going to kill him or something, or somebody was going to get arrested. I think you were going to kill me, so I was okay, especially me being in a Pinto.
So what was your recollection of that encounter?
But I was driving down Mulholland, and you know, at the curves, I saw him driving off. I don't remember what curve it was, but I could see from the top of the curve he was driving off. And you were pretty mad. I saw that, and I figured you were either going to walk downhill, which, like you said, was 4 miles, or you were going to walk uphill, which was probably another 2.5.
Right.
Since I was going downhill, I figured, you know, I'm from the South Bronx, bro. You didn't scare me that much.
Well, Will's a big dude, and Will played the big, scary guy, Poncho, in Stand and Deliver, although I don't know it's your heritage. I don't think it's Hispanic, is it?
I'm Puerto Rican French.
All right, so you're playing these sort of, this is L.A., so you got to be Spanish, and he's sort of the...
I believe I was playing a Mexican character. It was a compilation character.
Sort of the muscle, the tough guy. And Stand and Deliver, which was a huge movie in 1988. Yeah, yeah. Now, you must have picked me up in 1987 or something, because the movie hadn't come out yet.
That's right. We had just finished it. And I believe that at that point, I was probably coming back from doing some dubbing, some voiceover work and stuff on the film.
So you come out to L.A. You're driving a Pinto, so your parents aren't rich, right?
No, of course not. South Bronx, 8 brothers and sisters. Come on, man.
Wow.
So you pick me up. We drive down Laurel Canyon. My apartment's on Laurel Canyon.
That's right. I remember that. It was on the corner right by the freeway.
Right. And so I think at some point I said, you want to smoke pot or something?
Yes. Yes, you did.
That's gay code.
Right. It's gay code. Yeah, I know.
Did he know that?
Absolutely.
I knew.
That was what?
I knew Will wasn't gay, and I knew I wasn't gay, or I was pretty sure.
You shared that point.
I wasn't gay. So Will and I sat in my apartment. He just picked me up in his Pinto. We sat in my apartment. We just started talking about show business. And I was probably telling him I wanted to do comedy.
Yeah. I remember that. Absolutely remember that.
And we actually, I think, went out
to like go see an improv troupe like
the
next week or something.
Forged a friendship.
Wasn't that the Groundlings or something?
We went, I think.
Was it Bill Hudnut? Was
that? As memory serves, there was an improv troupe that was playing up on Universal Studios at like one of those Wompopper restaurants or something. And we went to go check them out, but it was like the Frayed Knots or something. It wasn't
a Herald team.
That was like a smoke filled time for me, so I'm a little bit.
But you did have a Pinto. You did pick me up.
It was blue. Oh, dude, it was baby blue. I remember that. It was a Vega. Trust me, I had just this drunk driver. I guess the guy had a heart attack or something. Had crashed my car, totaled my car, and then I ended up with that car.
And so, Stand and Deliver then came out, and Stand and Deliver became one of the bigger films of the year.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I don't know if it got any notices.
It got Oscar nomination for James Edward Olmos.
Yes.
It got notices. And the crew, the cast won
James
like Pepsi's Artist of the New Generation Award or something like that.
And so for you...
ensemble cast.
So for you, I think you figured, all right, well, this is a pretty good start for my acting career, right?
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. I did pretty good. I was on MacGyver. I was in a bunch of stuff, dude.
And when did you get the thing that's funny is you're the executive chef at St. Jude Hospital now, right?
I was always a chef, even through everything that I was doing. I started out as a chef when I was a kid. I started cooking when I was 8. Well, by the time I was 15, I was like an assistant chef, would be the equivalent of a sous chef over here. And I always did the chef thing on the side, whether I was still acting or doing whatever. So that was always something that I did. I was over at Mastro's Steakhouse. As a executive sous chef, I was at Charlie G's. I'm sure you're familiar with Charlie G's in the Valley. I opened up Citizen Smith in Hollywood, then Trifecta in downtown LA. Yeah. So I've always been involved in the restaurant business. My sister passed from cancer. That's how I came to the hospital.
Wow. Oh, and so now executive chef at the St. Jude.
God bless you, man.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I appreciate it.
Did you
doing some pretty incredible stuff with food, Adam?
Did you ever?
For hospital. You know?
Did you? I'll tell you, the hospital isn't the hospital anymore, food wise. No. Just like the ballpark's not the ballpark anymore. Yeah. You used to go to the ballpark, and you had to just sort of suck it up. Mm-hmm. You know, do you want that frozen malt with a wooden stick, or do you want peanuts or crappy hot dogs?
Yeah. Especially St. Jude's.
We're way past fish sticks over here.
Because kids live there for months.
Yeah, and you know what's funny? I did when I first started because I got in here from I had put my resume online. It's a whole convoluted story, but I put my resume online, monster.com, and the lady pulled my resume off. I was on one day, and I interviewed with her, and I wasn't sure if I was going to take the job because it was a big change, and it's corporate, and I'm fucking not corporate, I got to tell you. So I told her what my plan was for food. There was a little stipulation where you can't cook fresh food, and it's not something that they do, and blah, blah, blah. I said, listen, fire me in 3 months. After 3 months, we had saved money, the food quality had gone up, and actually, in a couple of weeks, I'm one of the keynote speakers at a convention in San Diego about healthcare, hospital healthcare food, because we're number one in California.
Good for you, man. You're a model.
Man. I'm hanging. You know, trying. I'm doing stuff that nobody does, so that's cool. You know.
Well, not only that, Will, but I think the frustrating part is we know there's a way to do the fresh stuff and the good stuff and do it at the same price or a cheaper price than the overprocessed flash frozen stuff. And that's the frustrating part. I get it. If it's purely monetary and it's like, we simply can't afford this, but we know when there are people like you that are motivative and innovative, it can be done.
You know what? I'm probably going to get in trouble depending on who hears this, but there are so many regulations right now. I think it's overregulated. And one of the challenges that I had was the fact that if you got people who know how to cook food and you teach them temperatures and you do all that, you know, kind of stuff, then there shouldn't be a problem. And the problem was that in previous times, before I started, everything was frozen. Like, for instance, what's that big hospital in La Cienega? I went there to visit.
Cedars?
And they were
Cedars, yeah.
They had omelets that were already frozen and pre-made. What the hell is that?
I can't imagine frozen omelet.
You know, fucking frozen. Yeah. Are you kidding?
By the way, you know, if you really think about it, the hospital is the time you need the food the most.
Yeah, right, sure.
Spiritually and physically.
Quality of life.
Well, it's funny. As a kid, I was pretty sickly. I had a lot of, you know, asthma and stuff like that from when I was a kid. So I remember that every time I went into the hospital, there were two things that you looked forward to: TV and some kind of food. You know, because everything else was, you're being pricked, you're being woken up, you're being flipped over and fingered. I mean, it's crazy. And so what I did was, from the aspect of the cooks, when I came in, I told them, I said, listen, most of you are just like, you're human can openers. Everything is open can. I said, so I'm going to teach you guys how to cook, and we're going to make this fun. It took a little bit of training, but, you know, they're in it now, and, you know, and it's pretty cool because we get those HCAP scores. You know, those are scores that they kind of measure in the industry. And it's all been good, man. You know.
Hey, Will.
God damn! What a hero!
Yeah.
What a hero! I knew this kid had it when he picked me up.
You chose him.
Hey, hey. I just wasn't worried about what it you thought I had.
Now, did you ever know you picked me up later on when I was doing the man show or whatever it is?
I had when I picked you up. I remembered recognizing you when you got into the car. And I couldn't remember exactly.
Wait a minute. Hold on. You couldn't have recognized me because I wasn't, yeah. I didn't do anything back then.
He was a bona fide nobody.
But it wasn't on that vein. I had seen you somewhere. I wasn't sure where it was.
Uh-huh.
And then when you started talking about the comedy, and then I saw you on the show, because back then, I did a couple of, what are those beach things with the poor man? Remember?
Loveline Beach, whatever. The poor man who hosted Loveline.
Right. I did a couple of the shows on the beach with them. But I remember that when after I picked you up, that sounds weird.
Made me an omelet when we got back to my apartment.
I looked in the freezer; there was none. I remember that afterwards when you got your popularity and your celebrity, I was like, that's pretty cool. It was a funny story. So. You know.
Well, I'm glad you remember that. I'm glad you remember my cool leather jacket I had.
Well, dude, now I'm writing a book.
You're writing a book?
Yeah, dude, I'm writing a book. It's in editing and finishing it up right now. But it's called
Adam Carolla Blooming a Pinto. Well, I'll tell you what, Will, when you finish the book and the book's ready to come out and people can get it on Amazon and all that stuff, we'll have you on and we'll give it a shot.
Very cool.
And you can follow Will on Instagram at goodfood at St. Jude. Thanks, Will. It's been a long time.
Thanks a lot, Adam. Congrats. I appreciate you guys. Have a great day, man. Have a good weekend.
Awesome.
A great story.
I love the CompuSalt of... I picked up you, you know, I picked you up because, you know, you seemed stranded, but also I absolutely knew I could take you.
Yeah, you were no threat. You were no threat.
Well, Will's a big dude.
Yeah, man.
I'm so in love with what people can do when they're interested and involved. Yeah. And that's what I hate about systems. The system is there's your can opener, there's your microwave, why are we doing it this way? And they go, because that's how we do it.
Right.
And then everyone goes back to getting their job. And that's the problem with sort of big bureaucracy and just big everything and big regulation, it almost immediately just turns into that.
Yeah.
Like it's a force. You know, when you go to the DMV and they go, we need you to fill out this piece of paper. And you go, I already filled out one. We need you to fill out another. And you go, well, let me just hand it to you now. You have to wait 24 hours. You can come back tomorrow. All that stuff is born. There's a force that just pushes everyone that direction. Now, there are a couple of guys like Will who try to push against that force. But most of the force just goes, whatever it is, that's what, you know. I have my TSA pre-pass here. You have to take your shoes off. I have my pat. The line is closed. You have to go through this.
Like, it's a drone.
It can go no other way to that. Now, the extreme of that is just sort of Russia or China. It's like everyone get in your gray pajamas, get on your bike from the 50s and ride it to the factory. That's how it's like every force is pushing it that way. The force I like are the Richard Branson forces. Like, hey, we're heading toward rocket ships and travel and hyperloops and blah, blah, blah. That So you have to kind of say to yourself, what force do you want to get behind? And my feeling is I want to get behind the Elon Musk force and the will force and let everyone thrive and be their best. And also, for the people who work at the hospital, they want to cook. They want to have fun. I mean, they want to experiment. They don't want to open cans and thaw out omelets. They want to do that stuff. That's the part that's sad, too. But they can quickly be talked into just hitting the microwave.
Go along with it. Like you said, if it was half the cost, then that'd be one thing. But the only cost is effort.
Right. And that's my whole kind of like LAX security thing. Like, how come, why isn't there a monthly meeting going, how could we be better? Come on. I want you people smiling. I want you to say thank you. I want you to say come again or have a safe flight or good to see you or whatever it is. Like, don't be bitchy. Don't be moany. Don't be pouty. Don't be sing-songy. We had the guy out of, there's an interesting dude gene. And I'm interested in what you guys think about it. It's interesting in that it's not smart and it's not dumb and it's not militant and it's not mean per se, but it's this, and I'll tell you what it is. When I was a kid, you go to a transmission shop or something, like back when they had Ma and Pa shops, and you know, they always have like a weird cat that lived there and was like sitting on a shelf in the back. And there'd always be some broken part, like from a transmission synchro mesh, it blew up or something like catastrophically. And the guy'd have it up on display, like behind him, like, here's what could happen.
That's warning.
And then they had those signs. There was one of a bald guy with a big nose on the ground holding his belly, laughing, saying, "You want it when?" Which was always, even when I was 9, I thought that was kind of weird. Like, all right. And then there's another one that said, like, I could do it and it would cost $100 and take a week, or you could help and it would cost $1,000 and take 2 weeks. Like,
zing.
It was way weird, but there's a whole bunch of weird prop, the difference between the antithesis of the eagle that was soaring, you know, when God's wind under my wings, right, all things are possible. Like, it was the exact opposite of that.
Accessories.
It was then when you carried me.
Yeah, it was a whole lot of like, you want it when, and you could help, and you know, whatever. And like a lot of stuff like, I can do it fast, or I can do it well, or I can do it cheap and fast, and you can have, you know, all this kind of stuff about how much it's going to cost and why you have to wait and all that. The dude who, and this was at Vegas, this was leaving Vegas, sorry, Phoenix, this was leaving Phoenix a few days ago. It's kind of the realm of the big white dude. It's not... The middle-aged black chicks at LAX are just bitchy. They're just kind of mean. They're like in a bad mood. They're kind of short. Their answers are short and curt and whatever. This is the guy, you know, the know-it-all guy with the beard in sort of every office who knows a lot about World War II and about the German Panzer divisions.
Happy to offer.
Whenever you bring it up, knows kind of a lot about law enforcement and stuff like that. And like, you're one of those guys who goes, I don't feel like kids should get hold of an AR-15. What do they need an assault rifle for? I mean, it's a machine gun. It's semi-automatic.
Well, actually.
It's not a full automatic as you hold the trigger. This is semi-automatic. Like, whatever your point is, he kind of shits on it with technology. With his thing.
Finer detail.
Yeah. So this guy was the guy who stood in front of the line and he did the sing-songy, everything out of the pockets, and... I would suggest you listen. No one's getting past me. Like, nobody. I am. You can't go. Here's what's happening. I've said it once, folks, and I'll say it again. Empty pockets, shoes off. Empty pockets, shoes off.
That
shoes on, no phones. Pockets.
That means laptops.
Right, right. And if you think you're getting on your flight with full pockets and full shoes, not walking past me. Like, and if you think, like a lot of like, and if you think you're going past or you're not listening, or, and a kind of a, I'm here all day.
Right.
Like,
I can outstand
you're
you.
You're making a flight. I'm eating lunch in 2 hours, so I'm not going anywhere. I live 3 miles from here. Like, sing-songy, weird.
Corrections officer.
One of my things would be, let's not personalize any of this stuff. Like, I don't care what you think or where you're at or where you live or where I'm going, and you're here and you're here, and I can outweigh you, ladies and gentlemen. I got all day. I get paid by the hour.
The relationship is purely transactional. You want something, he wants something. He wants a safe flight, you want to get through.
He's just a messenger.
He's making it confrontational, adversarial.
Combative.
Like his first step is, let's make this combative and adversarial.
Right. Okay.
This is a strange instinct.
It's a weird thing. This is the jurisdiction of the bearded 40-something, possibly with a ponytail, but straight edge, not a drug slammer, like a ponytail but doesn't do drugs, husky but not fat, sing-songy, knows everything but nobody respects it. Like, I mean, no one's attracted to it. They know everything but nobody likes them, and women don't like it at all.
Tell me about it.
What is that thing?
Yeah.
That thing. I don't know who that guy is. He's a guy's interested in law enforcement, but never really committed to it.
Like you said, the guy who has the factoids or the whatever, and no one seems to care or is possibly annoyed by it. Is he attracted to that job? Because now he has a captive audience. Now you must listen. Now I will project, and you can go nowhere.
It definitely has something to do with an emptiness.
Yeah, I don't. We all knew that guy from high school. A lot of times, this guy wore the army jacket. And just first things first, he knows a ton about World War II and weaponry. And then something with the military, although there's a reason why he never followed through. Like, I have flat arches, so I wasn't accepted. But then he entered this program. It's like not quite a cop. Always a little gut, but you don't want to call him fat.
You get to wear the uniform.
Also a little scared that he could kick your ass, even though he's probably a frightened nerd. But he's a husky frightened nerd.
He has backup.
Okay. I'll tell you guys about Beachbody On Demand. That guy should use Beachbody On Demand and lose a few pounds, man. Online fitness streaming service. Unlimited access to a variety of effective world-class networks and workouts personalized to your needs. Plus, nutritional content, convenient, accessible on your computer, web-enabled TV, tablet, smartphone, or any other web-enabled device. No need to go to the gym. Annual subscriptions cost way less than a gym membership. Programs for any level of fitness, cardio, weight training, yoga, low impact, and even dance. Over 600 different workouts. So, you want to try it for free right now? Try it for free. My listeners get a free trial membership when you text the word ADAM to 303030. That's full access, all the workouts and nutrition information, all the stuff you need free. Just text the word ADAM to 303030. All right, let's see. Back to the phones here, because Tracy from Wisconsin is getting married on our cruise.
I'm so excited about this.
Seattle. It's our Seattle cruise. We're leaving from Seattle. That's coming up on the 14th of September, going through the 17th. Seattle of Victoria, British Columbia. And it's got a rock climbing wall and a wakeboard lake and all kinds of stuff. I'm excited. And the first batch sold out. So we've opened up some more rooms. And it's just fun, man. It's at adamcarolla.com. This is going to be a world-class ship with world-class restaurants, and I am looking forward to this one. And also, we'll be playing the Moore Theater the night before, so come on out, get there a little early, and hang out with us.
Perfect for newlyweds.
Tracy?
Yes, sir?
Let's hear about your story.
Well, Kevin introduced me to your show, actually, and I'm glad he did.
Who's that?
Kevin, her fiance.
You know Kevin.
Oh, Kevin, my fiance.
All right.
So, well, you know, Kevin, sure. So he told me, he said, "Oh, Tracy, you have to listen to this guy." And I travel for work, so I'm on the road all the time, and music can be mundane sometimes. So I thought, "Oh yeah, I'll try some podcasts." Well, let me tell you, you have changed my entire life. I mean, I'm like, this guy is driven by logic. Finally,
for the better or for the worse, Tracy.
Driven by logic. I like that.
Yeah, indeed. So, you know, and I remember the first time I went home and I was like, oh my God, I love this. Thank you so much. You know, and, you know, sometimes if I run out of miles and there's no Adam Carolla, I'll, you know, tune into a little Reasonable Doubt or something as well. So you've really, like, introduced me, I guess, to so many other logical people like yourself.
Well, thank you. So, and yes, and Mark Gargis is very logical as well.
Dennis Prager, all of it. Yep.
Yeah, I have an attraction to logic, wherever, whatever the source may be. But thanks, Tracy. And by the way, I'm coming to Madison, Wisconsin, at the Capitol Theater on April 6th.
Yeah, 6th.
I know, and I wanted to go, but the very next morning I have a fundraiser pool tournament. We raise money for breast cancer research. So, and I have to go to that because I won it last year, and I have to return the trophy.
You won it.
Goodbye.
Yeah, yeah.
So you must be quite skilled at pool.
I'm all right, yeah.
So, you know, someone's good. I know I roll a stick.
Yeah.
You know, I've dabbled.
That's nice. You must have a basement.
I do.
You have to have a basement if you're going to be good at pool.
Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. So Tracy, now we're talking about getting married on the cruise?
Yeah. So, you know, people are bugging us, when are you going to get married? And, you know, we say, oh, we're in our mid-40s. We're not in a huge hurry. You know, we're together either way. And I thought to myself, you know, I'm pretty sure that ship captains can marry. So I reached out to Parker and I said, what about this? And he came back to me with a pretty high starting number for marriage packages. Jeez. And I was like, yeah, for that money, I can throw a hell of a party back home.
Parker's always selling.
Yeah, right. So he agreed. And then I just kind of put it to bed. And like a day later, I get this email from him that says, you know, yeah, you know, the cruise line can be expensive, but I reached out to the crew and Adam said he'll do it. And I stopped. Well, I read that message twice, and then I turned and I read it out loud to Kevin to make it real. And you know what Kevin said? This is the beauty of it. He said, "I'm not surprised. I can see Adam as being just that kind of guy."
Yeah. Oh, what a sweetheart!
So you undercut the captain by a couple hundred bucks?
Yeah. Yeah, I just said, what's he coming in at? And then we just went 6% lower than him.
That's good. It's good business.
Right.
Undercutters.
So, Tracy, I'm not sure. We're going to work it out sort of logistically and legally and spiritually. I don't know if I have to go online and have my sister fill out some paperwork or something, something like that. But it will be part of the cruise, and it'll be another fun part of the cruise. And I am looking forward to this cruise because our last cruise, all cruises are good because you people are there and the drinks are flowing. But the last cruise was low rent in terms of it just had like one big dining area and the one big omelet bar, whatever. And this ship has the sushi place, has the steak place, has the whatever.
Too
so
much.
You can steal away and go have a private meal if you like. Also, it's got a rock wall, which I'm into. It's got the wakeboard. And I also love, if you ask me, I'm kind of that neck of the woods guy, like the British Columbia, Seattle kind
Pacific
of thing.
Northwest.
Is great as
Cozumel.
Mexico or Cozumel is the sort of tropical vibe. Mm-hmm. I like that end of the world.
Wash and green.
Yes. I love that. So I'm looking forward to it.
Now, are we all invited to the wedding or is this a closed door private ceremony?
I don't think much of a choice, actually.
I want to be a part of this wedding.
Okay.
I want to announce the hell out of this.
Yeah, I'll throw petals in front of you, Tracy.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, Ivan, what are you picturing, Tracy?
Oh, jeans, everything casual, just having a good time, having some mangria with, you know, crew and just everybody else who's there. Everybody's invited.
Could you a bachelor and bachelorette party the night before?
I mean, isn't every night a bachelorette party on that thing?
Pretty much.
I also heard there's a story about you surviving cancer and being pregnant. I'd like to hear that as well.
No cancer. But,
don't be a one-upper.
What'd you say, Max Mata?
She went to get scanned for cancer.
Yes.
Because cancer runs in her family.
We've all gotten scanned.
All right. Sorry.
So I wasn't.
If you say
really,
me she's going to get scanned for cancer and then she had a thing, that sounds like a cancer or something.
Yeah, but it's part of the story.
I got you. Just be a little clearer next time we talk about the cancer part.
Copy that.
Okay.
So I wasn't quite feeling myself. And, you know, cancer does run in my family, you know, and I was in my early 40s, and I thought, why not get it, you know, checked out? So I did. I made an appointment for a scan of just all the organs and such, and while I was there, the technician informed me not only was I pregnant, and the years have, you know, all the doctors in my past have always said that I was unable to have children for this or that, and you kind of tune it out after a while, and just, you know, not being able to have children becomes just part of your life, and you work around it. But so when I was in for the scan, she informed me that I was pregnant, and not only was I pregnant, but I was 8 months pregnant.
Oh, my God. There's a whole reality show about this.
Jeez. I know. So when people say, how didn't you know? I honestly didn't know. I gave birth exactly 2 months later. So I had the scan on September 20th, and I had Jackson on November 20th. And I did wear my jeans the day I delivered. So, you know, I guess not, I'm a good German woman with, you know, hips. And so I carried it very well. But nobody noticed. I kept it a secret.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, Tracy, we're honored that you'd like to get married on the cruise. I'm honored when anytime anyone shares anything I do with somebody. To me, that's the ultimate sort of honor.
Right. I turned this thing into a life event.
But when someone goes, "Oh, I read your book and I knew as I gave it to so and so," like I think anyone who ever does anything. Look, you could mow lawns and then have someone go, "I told my friend up the street, you do a great job on the lawn, and now they want you to work." I mean, that is, when I was a carpenter, that was always the thing. It's like, "Oh, I got a friend wants you to do some work, and I told him I recommended you." Like, I recommended you, I recommended your book, I recommend your podcast, I recommend whatever you recommend, that's a movie. Mm-hmm. It's the sincerest form of praise because it's a boots on the ground kind of praise. Like, it's a real praise. Like, hey, this guy did a good job working on my house. He should work on your house. That's not even praise. It's a sort of nuts and bolts real praise. Hey, looking good doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah. You think you would have gotten enough of that in your childhood, but.
Oh, man. Yeah, my dad, big thumbs up. Right. Looking good.
Attaboy. Pats on the back. Yeah.
Hey, Tracy.
Yes.
So we appreciate it, and well, I think as we get nearer to the date of September 14th, we shall reconvene with this. Now, if you're going to miss me in Madison, you have to send your husband. We say it was Kevin.
Kevin.
Kevin. Yeah.
It's Kevin. Now is Kevin allowed to go without you to the show?
Absolutely. Oh, for sure. I send him away all the time.
Okay. So I'll see him. I will see him in Madison, Wisconsin, the Capitol Theater. That'll be April 6th. And then he'll tell me, "I'm Tracy's." And that'll be our laugh. And then later on, we'll talk. And then we'll come up with a plan for the ship. Yes?
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Now, you guys are coming out. You guys now, you have to come see the live podcast at the Moore. Which means you got to get out to Seattle day early.
We're actually coming in on the 10th. Well, we have to pick up the license on the 11th, no later, because you have to have it for 3 days. But I have my cousin and my aunt both live in the Seattle area, so it's going to be a little family time before a little party time.
That's perfect.
Good, yes.
We'll shower first.
Seattle is anyone who's planning on this voyage with us. Do yourself a favor. Get to Seattle a couple days early. Yeah. See the sights. Walk through the town. Enjoy yourself some fine craft brews and some meals. And then we'll see you at the Moore the night before. And then we set sail.
Good week.
All right. Let's see. Yes, Gina Grant.
You know what? In the vein of things you never stopped hearing about in movies and TV shows, and I have not heard it maybe a decade, are blood tests before you get married still a thing? Because I remember movies, we got to get our blood test, and we're going to just go to the courthouse. Do you not get blood tests anymore?
I'm almost positive it is. I remember that.
But remember, it used to be in movies, used to hear about it. We got to get our blood test, then we're going.
Yeah. I think it became a comic trope that they just, in the 60s, in the 70s, in the 80s, they just had like four or five jokes, and they would just use they just kind of used those jokes like over and over. And it wasn't, there's no shame to it. It's what you did when you made a sitcom.
Right.
You used these handful, it was like a basket of jokes and you could reach in and grab one out.
Familiar trope.
And that was just it. And if you go back and watch, as I did the other night, I watched an episode of Maude and I watched an episode of One Day at a Time.
Yes.
And it's like, it's just the same five things, like over in every sitcom. And so the getting blood tests and all that may have been part of it. I don't know. Look it up, Max Pat. I'd be curious if you still have to do the blood test.
Here's a little fun fact.
Gary and Dylan both getting married did not get a blood test. And there you go.
Wasn't the whole point to make sure you weren't related? Like, what was the point of the blood test? So now they don't care anymore.
Yeah, I guess they didn't want it's going or at a certain point they wanted to make sure you're marrying a relative.
Sure.
All right, I got some stuff. I got a joke I'm in love with from Oscar rehearsals I was at the other night. It's a ballsy joke.
Well, let's hear it. This one's gonna. I assume it's not gonna make the.
Can we know it?
Well, my only thing is we got callers on the line and we're recording this before the Oscars. For the next game, for the next half. So if they hear it, I don't want it getting out to anybody.
Oh, no. This is a joke that's not going to be on the air.
Okay, cool.
All right.
But thank you.
Proceed.
I'll tell you about hymns first, and then I'll tell you about this joke I'm in love with. Max Pata, you can go get my phone, and you can go get some emails. I had an email exchange with Judd Apatow because I saw his picture in the audience on a stick.
So that's how they do it.
I sent it to him, and then he sent back immediately, like, too tight. Why now? Who's sitting around me? Like I want to know who's...
That's right. Who am I sitting next to?
Because I shot him a shot. It wasn't tight, but it wasn't loose. Mm-hmm. But he wanted to know, like, what pool am I in? Which I guess you would want to know, too.
Yeah.
If someone shot you a picture of you at the... Oscars, right?
Absolutely.
First, I'll tell you about him. Sexual performance issues are more common than you may think. 25% of the ED cases are guys under 40. ForHims.com. One-stop shop for your hair loss, skin care, sexual wellness, and more. Not herbal supplements, medical-grade solutions, and generic equivalents of name-brand prescriptions, including one ED pill that starts... with the letter V. I think you may know what I'm talking about. No waiting room, no awkward doctor visits. So, a lot of folks out there listening, they need a little tending to, and they don't have a bunch of money, and they don't want to wait and make appointments and all that. And I get it, the part where we have to sit there in the doctor's room, stare at that aquarium, those outdated magazines. Try Hims for a month. Do it today. $5 while supplies last. You get the whole month for $5. Website for full details. So you just check out the website. This would cost hundreds of dollars if you went to a pharmacy. So, forhims.com/Adam. That is forhims.com/Adam. Forhims.com/Adam. All right. So, again, we're taping the show in a little different order. Then, this is before the Oscars. So we're starting the rehearsal schedule is go through the rehearsal on the rehearsal is a kind of very loosey, kind of walkthroughy thing on Thursday, and then writing on Friday, and then full go through it on Saturday.
Right.
And then Sunday's a full go through it in the morning and then take a break and then start the show. It's a long day. And it's funny. I love all the rules in life, which is the presenters are just like Oscar extras, SAG AFTRA. You know, it's typical person. It's like the 50-year-old woman who wants something to do, and it seems cool to her to be able to go down to hold a wooden Oscar.
Yeah.
And they always, when they open the envelope, they go, for best picture, for Oscar for rehearsal purposes only, right. And then they have to say it because God forbid, even
footage
though
gets out,
it's a middle-aged woman holding a wooden Oscar 3 days before the Oscars, but they have to. Yep. You have to say it. You could never just say get out. I would. But then you'd never be asked back. You have to go for rehearsal, whatever the category, you have to go for rehearsal purposes only. So,
but let's be honest, this is going to win.
Right.
It's Coco.
So you get there and you sit in the front rows. The writers kind of fan out, just sort of lounge in the front rows. And then there's tech people and camera guys, and everyone's kind of get the feel like, where do you want the camera and what do we want to do? How do we want to shoot this? And when we'd go there, some of the surprise stuff, some of the stuff I can't talk about, but it's a lot of like, well, where's the camera going to be and who's going to lead? Is Jimmy going to be leading? Is he going to be behind everybody, or who are we going to use, or where's everyone sitting? So all the celebrities have their seats and they all have a picture of themselves. And it's on a sort of piece of cardboard. So it's a piece of cardboard that's like, it's about 18 inches wide and it's about 2 foot tall. And it sits where the back would sit on a chair.
Like the upright poster board or something.
Yeah. And then there's a stick, and the stick is literally like a paint stirring stick. Yeah. And that's duct taped to the back of the cardboard. And then it goes up to a picture of the celebrity's head. And they lean them where they lean them. There's a couple things, and I don't know why I'm always bumped by everything, but all of the pictures are black and white. Right. And part of the reason they're all there, and most of the reason they're all there, is they're there so that the camera people can sort of acclimate. And they're also there so that Jimmy can stand on stage and know where Harrison Ford is and know where Daniel Day-Lewis is. I got to tell you, in the black and white form, it doesn't pop very much.
They blend.
They blend a little. And then there's like, hey, there's the black guy and the white guy. And there's not that big a difference. Like, So the first thing I always do is like, can they afford a color printer? Mm-hmm. Like, what year is it?
Like, it'd be gettable.
Easy enough.
It's just, when you're standing on stage and everybody's black and white and it's from the same printer and it's on just a piece of notebook paper, you can tell who they are if you stand, but it's not a quick reference thing. It's not a boom, boom, boom kind of thing. You have to look at it for a minute. So that's number one. Do you have a picture of it, Max Zapata? It's, there's like...
That's tough.
Like, well, there's Willem Dafoe, and it looks like Willem Dafoe if you stand next to it. Right. But if you stand up on stage, you don't go, hey, there's Willem Dafoe from 20 feet away. Or Willem Dafoe, sorry. And a lot of the girls kind of look the same, and a lot of the guys kind of look the same.
And it's not just like a headshot where you really see the face. Some of them are just full-body promo shots. You can't tell who it is. Like,
that's a good point.
Right. So one of my things would be, let's go full headshot and let's spring for color.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure we could find a picture of Judd Apatow in color in 2018. And I bet we could get a printer from Staples that was under $200 that took a color cartridge.
Pretty sure we can afford it. Pretty sure the Oscars are doing well enough.
It's one of those many things. And really, again, it's really there for Jimmy and for the camera people and the director to be able to go, you know, cut to this guy, cut to Timothy Chalamet or whatever, cut to. And him in black and white does not really look like anybody you really recognize from that movie or whatever it is. So color'd be nice. Anyway.
The joke.
Color would be nice. So that's one of the thoughts I had.
Is there a reason that some of the names are in white and some of the names are in black?
I have no idea.
It looks like nominees are in white.
Okay.
At least from the couple that I can see.
That makes sense. Again, I would go color and do like red nominees and black, you know, for the folks that aren't. But anyway, so there are all these folks, and they're just kind of littered around. And sometimes you recognize them and sometimes you don't recognize them. There's the writer from Lady Bird, and you don't recognize her, but she's nominated for writing for Lady Bird. And then there are folks you, then there's Oprah, and you recognize Oprah. I was saying to the writers, I said, somebody's got to get a headshot of Weinstein. Uh-oh. All we need is a little duct tape and a painter stick, a piece of cardboard, and then we just kind of slide in, and we just plant it like next to Ashley Judd. Or just right behind Michelle Williams or something. Yeah. We just put it there, and we don't say it. We just see how long
it takes for.
Like yeah. We just like having people walk by, maybe a little double take. Like tech guys aren't going to say anything.
Yeah. It wouldn't be standing out like a sore thumb because there are dozens of pictures. It would take people a minute to catch on.
And also, there'd be a part in your head that's like, oh yeah, he's here every year.
Yeah, why would this year be any different?
And there's also a part where the camera guy and the guy who's the cord wrangler. They're not going to the boss, man. They're going, hey, what's up?
No.
They're doing their job.
They're going, okay.
Head down, yeah.
Right. It would take a while.
That's funny.
But it'd be funny. I even suggested multiple ones. I said, let's get like three and just really spread them.
Don't forget spread them out.
And just see. And then we'll just sit back and watch and see how long. Because there'll be the first wave of people that'll notice but won't say anything. And then the second group that'll notice and say something but won't physically do anything. They'll have to get like on a walkie-talkie. And then there'll just be a whole group of people assume he's there.
That's great.
He's broken his silence. I like that idea.
Yeah, I like that idea a lot.
And then that'll get out, and then a bunch of people start protesting, and they won't show up that night.
Oh, it would be awesome.
It'll snowball.
It'll be awesome. Oh, my God. Okay. We get like him. We get Jeremy Piven. We get Roman Polanski.
Spacey.
We get Kevin Spacey, and we just like surround Ashley Judd.
Yeah, Marissa, like,
we just have him like to the right, to the left, and like Kevin Spacey behind.
Oh, no.
And then we take a picture and we tweet it out to Judd, and Ashley Judd goes ballistic on the internet, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it has to be innocent, like looking forward to the Oscars,
yeah.
Ashley.
Right.
Like you're
right.
Genuinely, you know, tweeting her. That's good.
That'd be
good,
Oscar right? Night.
Yeah. We could blow up the internet.
It'd be
first off, you want to talk about fake news? They would go. Fox Insane. News would like yeah. Drudge and Fox News and Breitbart would go, they would catch on fire. Your phone would explode if you had Breitbart,
from
right?
Fast typing.
Yeah,
the Google like, alerts.
You would get, let's see. Yeah, we get Spacey. Mm-hmm. We get Weinstein. Yeah.
Like Roman Polanski.
Oh, sure.
Roman Polanski's good. We'll put him back a couple of seats so there's only we're pushing too hard.
Tarantino and probably Matt Damon can sit back a row or two because they got roped in a little. James Franco's there.
Oh, Franco, yeah, we'll just do that, and we'll just surround Ashley Judd.
Is Cosby gilding the lily?
Might be a little over the top. People will know what's up at that point.
It's strong. I know if you did that, if we sat down and did it right, and you took a picture, and I think you might have to present it as... Maybe you take a picture of Jimmy, like, looking at a clipboard or something, but you have Ashley and Roman Polanski and Harvey Weinstein just to the left.
It's like, prominently in the background.
Prominently in the background, and
the
you
focus.
Tweet out Jimmy hard at work
That's
before
right.
the Oscars. Yep. You stay away from any of that
right.
and get it out there. Then you just wait. You
Somebody
just count
it.
Down sure. before the internet catches it, and then the internet catches on fire.
That's great.
It'd be awesome, right?
Did you pitch this to Jimmy?
Yeah. I have mixed feelings about it. I was trying to get Cousin Sal to do it. The problem is you don't want to ruin the Oscars
that would,
for
that
your buddy.
That would cast a pall.
But it would be awesome, right?
It would be sweet.
Somebody who's listening, at least Photoshop that. I'll send you guys. I have pictures of like Ashley Judd and her side. The pictures you have, I just saw Judd Apatow's head and I just sent it to him. Right. But there's more pictures, and there is the picture of like the Ashley Judd side.
All right, yeah, we'll put him up at adamcarolla.com.
Yes. All right. Let's see. We got, what time is it? Where's our clock? What's going on? Let's see. We got the news. We got Brian Craps on your point. Okay. We got all sorts of stuff. All right, I'll tell you what. Let's take a break. Do some good sports. We'll be right back after this.
Good sports. It's time for a sports segment. It's time for Ace and Dave. It's
Podcast One Sports Network presents Good Sports.
Hi and hello, sports fans. Welcome to a brand new week of hot sports talk here on Good Sports, presented by Podcast One Sports. Dave Damashek here. Adam Carroll over there. Reminder, before we jump into this week's action, go listen to the Dave Damashek football program, all sorts of football talk, breaking it down, and also analysis, like you hear here, of the game of life. Some a deep dive on a poor guy. So you'll be delighted by his experience as he tells tales of vomiting on the 405 freeway. Handsome Hank Hodgson. And we played a game with Oscar host Jimmy Kimmel and his pal Adam Carolla. Who's more handsome, Dave or? Two of the subjects were Jimmy Kimmel and Adam Carolla. And I don't, spoiler alert, this might upset you, Ace, but that particular listener favored me over you.
Hey, hey, I heard that episode. That listener was your mom.
A fan's a fan.
I get it. No, rules are rules, and a fan's a fan.
Mo Damashek did pay a visit, long time. Highest favorability rating, I think, of any guest I've ever had. So go download that one on iTunes. All right, Ace.
I miss my mom taking on your mom in the Adam Carolla trivia department.
That was one of the best.
I realize, like, when I think about my parents, and I think about, you know, fresh off the Oscars, and I just think about how insane their reaction is to A, me writing on the Oscars, but B, Jimmy writing for the hosting the Oscars, and how, you know, like when I met Jimmy, Jimmy lived in a rented house deep in the San Fernando Valley, like Canoga Park, one of those houses that was off an alley. So it was a little bit dicey because it seemed like any hoodlum could just sort of jump the fence and he's in your backyard. No pool, no, you know, like a big cement patio in the back, maybe, 1800 square foot with his two little kids and his wife and everything, like a miniature size house, you know, drove a beat up RX-7, and like a first generation Mazda RX-7. And, you know, we used to go to, like, imagine this, like I'd show up with a coupon that was a 2-for-1 at Acapulco restaurant, which is this bad chain Mexican. But if you ate before noon, you could get like a 2-for-1 entree. And it was a big deal for us. Like, hey, man, one of us is eating for free. And from that to hosting the Oscars. And in terms of like my parents' reaction to what I just described, it is if someone said, what's Jimmy Kimmel up to? And I said, he's back in the Tampa area and he's working for a drive time. Well, he's not on air, but he does receivables. Like he does some billing, but mostly he doesn't sell advertising. He collects the money that the advertisers sell. That is the same reaction. My parents have the exact same reaction to him hosting the Oscars, which is insane. Obviously, it's insane.
It really is bizarre. I don't know to what that's owed, but yes. Yeah, and I, you know, we've met some of Kimmel's boyhood friends to whom he remains chummy and loyal and all that, which is great. But for them, I don't even know how they fathom that rise. But you knew him, as you say, on the way. To see... It's a fascinating thing gauging who's going to make it, you know, who's going to make it out of this. Because everybody who arrives in L.A. and has some bit part like you describe at a radio station, who's the one that's going to emerge and become doing the stuff that Johnny Carson used to do perennially?
Right. Right.
Jimmy Kimmel is that guy. It's insane. Even in the span that I've known him, it's an amazing rise. You know, it really. But you, the thing I've told people this before, it's one of my favorite things to listen to. Listen to is the tale of Adam Carolla's rise from swinging a hammer to pop icon. And I think it's fair to describe you as that. But your rise was so fast that part of the story, we're not going to do because it really deserves a 45-minute, hour-long telling. But part of the story that it's always struck me and impressed me about Kimmel was that you said it was very fast. From the time you start doing Burcham on K-Rock, to the time that suddenly now you're on MTV, your love line has turned into a TV show, was very quick. It was, what was it, 12 months, 18 months, something like that? You sort of just leapfrogged him in terms of success. And you always said he never once you know, was resentful of that and continued to try to help you and get you better and position you better so you could rise even higher. I think that's why very few people would do that. Most people would quietly resent you. Like, hey, he's only there because I put him there, you know.
Right. Most people wouldn't do that if they worked at a roofing supply depot, much less show business, yeah. much less comedy.
Yeah, so that, true.
No comics especially aren't into helping other folks up the ladder ahead of them. That point, that quality that Jimmy has, in my mind, as I think about it, is the exact reason he is so successful, because he breeds so much loyalty and so much consistency around him that he actually, it's a very interesting dynamic, which is, everyone I know, my mom, my dad, Ray, like all the guys in my life, they show up. It's like an episode of the Evil Dead, The Walking Dead, mm-hmm. right? And you're wandering through the forest, okay? And you see a campfire, and there's a small group, a ragtag group of like survivors around the campfire, and you come walking up. Now, when my dad comes walking up, he goes, "You guys got any food? What do you got? I need water. I need food. I need a woman to lay down with. What do you got?" And someone's like, "Well, we're down to just a couple of granola bars." "Well, I'll take them. I'll take all of them." You know what I mean?
Do I have to lay down with one of them? Because that could be a little rough on me.
I want the women. What do you have? Yeah. What do you have for me?
Right.
And that Ray shows up and goes, "What do you have for me?" My mom shows up. That's their whole dynamic. That's half this country just shows up at that campfire with the strangers and goes, What do you got? What do you got? I'm hungry. I've been out in the, I'm cold. Give me a blanket. Give me some food. You got a beer? What do you got? Jimmy shows up and goes, "How can I help? What can I do?
Mm-hmm.
Can I gather some wood? Oh, I can cook. If you want me to cook, I'll start cooking. I won't even eat. I'll feed the kids first." And it seems a little weird at the beginning, because at the beginning, it's like, yeah, be with the smart guys. Be with my dad.
It's like an investment in a way.
Yes, yes.
Because you don't know. Not that his angle is to get that paid back to him.
No, but you go, but my dad goes, but after a few years of my dad mooching, people go, "Let this guy just get eaten by werewolves. We don't need this guy anymore." Whereas Kimmel, they go, whoa, protect him. We want him.
It is a fascinating life philosophy. You're right.
Speaking of food, Burger King, man.
Mm.
Got me hungry.
Mm-hmm.
That's one spicy sandwich over there. Actually, it's two spicy sandwiches, because right now at Burger King, you can get the two spicy crispy chicken sandwiches, just $6, made with juicy 100% white meat chicken and a crunchy coating with a blend of cayenne pepper spices, plus lettuce, tomato, creamy mayo, and a soft potato bun. What do? You head over to Burger King. You do it right now. This is Dawson's favorite. You do it right now. You get two delicious sandwiches for just $6, or you mix it up. You get the Whopper with the crispy chicken sandwich. Six different combinations of premium sandwiches as long as you go two for six. So you got the new spicy crispy sandwich, part of the two for six. So it's two of them for $6 only at Burger King. Gary,
pick two of the following for $6. Crispy chicken sandwich, spicy crispy chicken sandwich, or the Whopper sandwich. No substitutions. Limited time at participating locations only. Pricing higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Single sandwich at regular menu price.
Excellent.
All right. Let's cut it a little short, and we'll get in some sports in the next one.
All right. Definitely. Also, the onion rings are good at Burger King. That's my nice. Final note there. All right. Yeah. Hot sports talk coming your way tomorrow on Good Sports. For now, ooh, the Yup Nup song. I love it. For Adam Carolla, Dave Damashek, Good Sports. Out.